Welcome to episode 3 of Warmaster podcast interviews, featuring the great and the good of the wargaming world. In it, I ask a guest a series of 10 questions, 5 general and 5 specific to their field of expertise. This time features John Braisby, 3D sculptor and owner of Cromarty Forge and CentimeterWarriors.com. John produces fantastic 3D sculpted 10mm miniatures, some of which can be purchased directly, and some have been cast up using God's own lead-free pewter. Thank you for taking part, John. I'm sure that people are going to be really interested to hear your thoughts and insights, so let's get into the questions. General questions. Question 1. Can you describe your journey into wargaming?
First got into wargaming with the first edition of Warhammer Fantasy Battle. Now, if my memory serves me correctly, that came in a cardboard box and it had 3 or 4 different little paperback books in it. And it had every sort of conceivable army you can imagine, including fishmen and, you know, all the classics like orcs and goblins and so on and so forth. I only seem to remember that humans were rather unpopular because they seemed rather dull at the time. God, they even have rules for making up your own armies, so how to create your own points values in the Warhammer system. It was something that my brother had bought from Games Workshop in the West End of London, and I was fascinated with watching my big brother playing these games. And so, got into it through a scenario called the Bloodbath Orcs Drift, which was a rather fabulous little piece of bit of wargaming. I remember all the cutout pieces of cardboard being shoved across the dining room table with my best friend rolling dice, avidly trying to slaughter my orcs before they took a human village. Yeah, so that's how I got into it. And really from there, it expanded on into all the way through my high school years. And then there was a small dip towards the end of my high school years, and then a massive resurgence at university, where I met a whole group of people who were deeply into epic, Warhammer, Warmaster, 40k. And I think really the Warmaster was the one which got its claws into me and stuck with me for the decades since, basically because it's just such a fun game. It's such a focusing of a rule set into the most tactically important element of wargaming, which has to be maneuvering, has to be how you move your troops around the table. And whereas other war games, maneuvering is very mechanical and quite unsatisfactory, in Warmaster, you have that fabulous pushing your luck element, which just runs throughout the entire game. And the whole thing hinges on whether or not you can you make those right choices as to where to push your luck and where to move your pieces on the board.
Question 2. Tournament or casual gaming, which type of gaming do you prefer?
I think this is something which a lot of people are quite deeply invested in, this question as to what's the right way of wargaming. I'm also certain that anyone who expresses a really strong opinion on this one is actually also deep down quite happy to play the other sort of gaming. I think we all understand the enjoyment of playing war games with our friends, where the tightness of the rules is less important than the story which is being played out on the table. I think there's certainly a strong overlap in terms of the people who I have as friends and the people who I play games with, and wargaming has definitely sustained quite a lot of very, very important relationships and friendships for me. I also enjoy the rigor and the mental focus of trying to play in tournaments. I have never achieved any great results in tournaments. My desire to win is not matched with my skills or ability at the wargaming table. So I usually actually end up on the loser's table at the end of the day, which often ends up with the most fun wargaming experience when you're actually playing in the tournament for the tightness of the tournament rule set, but really enjoying a fun throwaway game with someone else who's been through the emotional vicissitudes of losing every single game in a tournament. Yeah, so both work for me. I think the thing which I find frustrating is having a rule system which is not tournament ready, which isn't a tight rule system, but trying to play it as though it is. And that frustration of either having an army which is seriously overpowered or playing against an army which is seriously overpowered, where it no longer feels like the game is balanced or in any way a test of skill or proper representation of uncertainty and luck, but instead it can start turning into a bit of a grind where it's more about, you know, did you pick the right army or did you read up on the perfect 1-2 element of a specific rule set? I have struggled with some very popular war games where I felt like every time I came to the table, I had either won or lost based on the amount of time I'd spent reading army books rather than the amount of time I had spent playing games or learning how an army should behave. So I think, yeah, once again, that's a place where Warmaster really excels. The simplicity of the army selection, the character of each of the armies being represented by only a couple of difference in points on the character line or the rule sheet, you know, the difference between 4 attacks and 3 attacks and the difference between a 5+ saving throw and a 4+ saving throw really being so obvious and clear on the battlefield and how they're going to apply to that that game as you're moving your men around on table and rolling the dice.
Question 3. Historical fantasy or sci-fi gaming, which genre are you attracted to most?
I first got into fantasy, Warhammer fantasy. Have definitely spent quite a lot of time playing sci-fi gaming, both Warhammer 40,000, Epic back in the day, X-Wing, Armada. I'm forgetting more than I'm remembering, actually. There's been a stream of dystopian wars, all sorts of sports, wargaming and all sorts of bits and bobs. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, so both fantasy and sci-fi have definitely worked for me in the past. They've definitely been very inspiring, seeing those different archetypes of how armies can look and behave and what they will, you know, firing those imaginations of what they would look like clashing on the battlefield. I find historical, or have found the thought of historical, quite difficult, especially near-term historical. I prefer my bloody violence at least one step removed from the real world. And I find that the historical wargaming feels a little too gory. I don't know, is it right to be enjoying conflicts where people have actually participated, died, and what war really means, which is slightly more terrifying. Maybe I'm taking this question a little too deeply. I think actually the only time I'm very interested in getting into Warmaster historical, I think that my excuse here is that the time frame means that it's so far removed from now that it doesn't feel too real. So yeah, both fantasy and sci-fi work for me.
Question 4. Which figure, either fictional or historical, best sums you up?
This one I ended up phoning a friend on, asked my eldest daughter which figure, either fictional or historical, best sums me up. and she very graciously went with either Shrek or Megamind, both of which are fantastic films, which I truly love. I think that really the most important element of those characters, which she thinks represents me, are probably their looks. But there you go.
Question 5. You can take one game with you to a desert island. Which game would you choose?
I'm assuming that I am allowed to have opponents to play the game with, in which case I would probably choose the game with the highest opponent count possible, maybe, trying to think now, something like Risk goes up to 6 players, 6-player Catan maybe. There was a Space Cadets Dice Duel game, which is pretty fabulous, which can go up to 10 players, which is chaotic fun at its absolute best, a hysterical game. If I wasn't bending the rules like that, then I would probably say it has to be something I can play on my own. So in which case, probably Pandemic or Forbidden Island or Forbidden Desert, one of those games which you can play solo play.
Specific questions. Question 1. What made you decide to become a 3D sculptor? Had you ever sculpted physically before you decided to start sculpting in 3D?
Okay, so I became a digital sculptor when I first got a 3D printer, which was back in around about 2006, 2007. Got an Ultimaker, one of those plywood printers that you had to build yourself and then start printing. It was an absolutely terrifying investment as you were putting this thing together over the course of a day or two and wondering whether or not you were going to end up with something which does anything at all or just a very expensive paperweight. Great fun experience at the end of it. It was fantastic seeing that first print coming off the print bed, obviously after about 5 or 6 failed attempts, which were amazingly frustrating. Then obviously you have the question of, great, I got a printer, now what? There wasn't an awful lot of available things to print at the time. So Thingiverse did exist, but it was relatively devoid of wargaming stuff. So I decided I would start with something really simple and I would make a... Yeah, okay, it wasn't simple. I decided I'd make a War Master Titan for 40K full scale. It stood around about... meter tall roughly when I finished it. That took me absolutely ages, but obviously in order to make it I had to sculpt it, and I sculpted in a program called SketchUp. I think at the time it was owned by Google. That was hard work. It wasn't anything like sculpting as I do it now. It was very much more sort of engineering design package, so you had to move corner points one at a time and align things up and join them together. And it was a lot of fun. The learning experience was rather amazing, but definitely not a path which I would advise someone to go down if they want to be sculpturing miniatures at the end of the day. Did I ever sculpt physically before going digital? Yeah, I did a little bit of green stuff sculpting when I was working out in Malaysia, predominantly because it was expensive and quite hard work to get hold of miniatures. So I could get big lumps of green stuff sent out and sculpt things at the time. I made a couple of what were referred to at the time as true scale marines. I think they would now probably be called Primus marines, which took a lot of time, a lot of effort, and the results weren't fantastic. But yeah, I have sculpted physically once or twice.
Question 2. Can you describe the process of sculpting in 3D? What software do you use and how long does it take to make a sculpt?
I use ZBrush or ZBrush if you don't want to make American people laugh. It's a software which uses a stylus, or you can actually use a mouse, but I don't think anyone ever would. It uses a stylus to sculpt effectively what would you consider a digital piece of clay. You start off with primitives, which you can conjure up into existence, things like spheres or cylinders or cubes. And then you can use various tools to deform them in 3D, three-dimensional space in within the computer. So you can stretch and squeeze and add resolution to them, then using what ZBrush refers to as brushes, which either sort of pull up or push down the clay and allowing you to have something like a real-life sculpting experience where you're etching into or pulling up onto a surface. There's a few sort of, well, there's a huge number of brushes which you can create yourself or download, which allow you to do various sort of texturing or creating almost entire objects into the space which you're working in. You can also sort of save objects and translate them onto from one sculpt to another. So, I have a growing catalogue of 10mm weapons from all the armies which I've made. So I can just conjure up Norse axes or one of my lizardmen Egyptian swords, all sorts of bits and bobs which you can create and apply to a model which you're working on. So how long does it take to make a sculpt? Probably... It's sort of a tough question. I usually work, let's say I work on a 10mm unit, I would try to make roughly one or two units a week, depending on exactly the complexity of the thing which I'm doing. Once you've created one unit, it's much easier to then modify it and change it slightly and then make another unit from that original starting point. So for instance, once I made a dwarf warrior, it's relatively easy to arm that warrior with a crossbow and slightly different armor, and then repose them as a crossbowman. Similarly, you can then sort of expand the range. So creating the first element of a range, so the first dwarf, is the trickiest bit. That said, you often find as you're going through a range that the thing which you start with gets modified slightly. So as when you get to the end, you end up with a slightly different base model. And that can be quite useful to go back to the beginning and sort of reapply that model. So as there's more consistency within the range. So in general, my preferred way of doing things is to do the entire range and then release that rather than doing things one model at a time. So how long is it to take to sculpt things? So, yeah, a single 10mm human, probably with starting from scratch, so completely new armor, new weapons, probably take about a day. And then it would take another day or 2 days to turn that on into 18 individual warriors, and then probably another day or so to make sure that they were printable and self-supporting.
Question 3. If somebody wanted to start sculpting, what advice would you have for them?
I would say jump in. Yeah, do it. It's great fun. Well, at least you need to find out whether or not you enjoy it. So the most important element is to start with something which is going to be not a massive hurdle to get into the thing. So let's start with something which would be relatively cheap or free. So why don't you start with Blender, which is a piece of software which allows you to do very complicated things with sculpting, from an engineering point all the way through to sculpting with a stylus. It's got a bit of a learning curve, it's a bit of a beast, but there's an awful lot of YouTube videos out there which will bring you through that learning curve. This will let you see whether or not sculpting is something which you find fun, if it's something which you want to enjoy, and if it's something which you can give the time and effort to without needing to spend a whole bunch of money on software and hardware, because you can get up and running with a mouse and a PC or an Apple. Yeah, so that's a great place to start. If you find that that's enjoyable and it's something which you want to put more time and effort into, then ZBrush or ZBrush is probably the next step you want to go and look at, and maybe some form of tablet to allow you to a to use a stylus and get working on that. You don't need to necessarily jump in with a sort of a Syntax screen. There are cheaper starting points there which would let you see whether or not you know ZBrush is something which is fun and a thing which you want to continue using. One thing is that there's learning curves with all of this stuff, and there's also memory curves with all of it. So you will need to spend a certain amount of time each day sculpting and learning and honing your skills to get to a point where you're going to be producing stuff which looks good to you and which you'd be happy to print up and get running with. Yeah, that's where I started. That's what I would advise doing. I'm kind of addicted to ZBrush now, and yeah, I find it a bit hard going backwards to Blender. Although I do occasionally have to do that because there's a few things which it supports, which is very useful.
Question 4. Without breaking any NDAs, can you let us know which miniatures you are working on at the moment?
Exclusively for my company, I'm working on 10mm models. So Cromarty Forge 10mm, feeding into Centimeter Warrior website is all about 10mm stuff. So the dwarves are available for download at the moment. I'm moving those on to a metal model as I speak. Actually, I think my caster is casting up the test batch today, so I get to have a look at those probably tomorrow, decide what needs to be modified for the final metal models. So I'm hoping to get those out in December. So yeah, that'll be the dwarves out. I'm working at the moment on some lizard men with a artist in Canada who's producing some absolutely amazing work. He goes by the name of Paul Yates. And yeah, so he's doing some absolutely fantastic work for me on lizard men, which have got a Egyptian theme to them. As I've said on the Warmaster GW Facebook page, when I was asked why I don't sculpt sort of classic stuff, I have to say that I find it quite hard to enjoy sculpting a model on the same sorts of style or look as something which already exists in the world. I left my job in the oil industry because, you know, things felt like a grind, and I was enjoying the sculpting work for the creativity and the splendor of making new stuff. So to create something which already exists in the world doesn't have that same buzz to it. It doesn't feel as much fun. So as long as people are enjoying the stuff which I'm creating, and as long as I have a license to make stuff for my own enjoyment, then I tend to prefer to do things which are a little bit off the beaten track, a little bit different to the classics. So yeah, Egyptian lizard men, they're definitely a thing coming along the line. After that, there are 5 or 6 things which people have asked me to look at. There was a crazy idea of a Cthulhu Chaos Army, which sounded like an awful lot of fun. I don't know what the IP issues will be there, and whether or not that's something which I would touch with someone else's barge pole. I understand that H.P. Lovecraft stuff is relatively available for working with, but I don't want to. Mow anyone else's lawn here. So I'll have to have a look at that and think about it and see if it's a popular idea or not. I'm also kind of tempted, this kind of refers back to a previous question, kind of tempted with maybe putting together some 10mm historical type stuff, maybe starting with Romans, just because they are, you know, an absolutely classic place to go. But yeah, maybe doing a crossover Norse army with sort of a living Norse army rather than an undead one. Maybe, yeah, sort of, yeah, Vikings sort of stuff. Berserkers. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of stuff out there for historical 10mm. But yeah, having a look at that and see if there's anything there which would be fun to do, which people would be interested in buying.
Question 5. What do you imagine the wargaming miniatures landscape will look like in 5 years' time?
Wow, that's a question. That's something which, I mean, there's obviously an awful lot of movement here. The proliferation of resin 3D printers and people who are going out there and printing up armies is clearly going to have an impact. I think that there's still a space for creating models in pewter. I don't want to create an us and them element of, you know, pewter versus 3D printing. I think that whatever gets people playing games is great. Whatever keeps the hobby alive and means that people are enjoying games and systems which otherwise are falling out of life, then these are really good things. I love to play against armies with new models, with different models. I love that the Warmaster community has grown and expanded massively. So, you know, the 3D printing side of it has brought life to Warmaster. It's undeniable. Certainly to the community side of things. It appears to be more stateside than European-based, if I'm looking at my sales, whereas my sales for pewter miniatures is more European-based than stateside. I don't know if that's just a take-up of 3D printers or if there is some cultural difference between Europe and America. I don't want to comment. I personally, this is just a personal view, I like the feel and the heft of pewter models. So I also like working with my guy who does all my casting, Robbie at Scotia Grendel. There's something fantastic about taking models to him, sitting down and looking at them, seeing what's going to work and what isn't going to work, and then making modifications to create a final product, which is what I would refer to as a nice, heavy, hard-wearing lump of metal, which you can put up onto the table and roll some dice against. So, yeah, I hope that, you know, pewter has survived for hundreds of years as a form of making toy soldiers with, and I dare say that it will last hundreds of years more. I think that 3D printing is breathing life into the game, and I'm hoping that that means that the two different ways of creating models will go side by side into the future. There's also some very interesting advances in injection molding, which are coming along at the moment. So injection molding combined with 3D printing to create much cheaper injection molds, which no doubt will have knock-on implications for games and models and what people are playing with. One of the things which I find very interesting about this whole piece is where the real cost in owning and playing miniatures actually is. A lot of people look at the headline cost of buying an army, and I think actually that kind of hides the true cost of ownership, which is related actually more to the amount of time, effort, love and soul ache that goes into painting, basing and transporting armies around. So I actually really think that the true worth of an army is more associated in the effort and energy and the love and the craft which gets put into making that army a tabletop force, which is something which you have pride in putting down and rolling dice with. So I think that there's some very interesting sort of economic elements which come into ownership and purchasing and trading of armies, which I imagine are going to play out in interesting ways as 3D printing develops and as more miniatures become available. I hope that all of this attracts more people into the game, makes more people interested in playing, especially Warmaster, a system which I have an awful lot of love for. So I'm just hoping that what happens now is the game grows, that there's more people to play with and against, and that when we come out of this awful period of plague, that we're going to have a blossoming tournament and gaming scene to enjoy and work into. So yeah, I think the next 5 years will hopefully be quite a positive time.
Thanks for your time and insight, John. I'm sure that people learned some stuff about 3D printing that they didn't know before today. I know I did. Thanks for coming on board, and good luck with all your future endeavours, and I look forward to seeing some more of those fantastic 3D sculpted miniatures hitting the shelves soon. Thanks again, John.